The Summons by John Grisham. Read by Kerry Shale. It came by mail, regular postage, the old-fashioned way, since the judge was almost 80 and distrusted modern devices. Forget email and even faxes, he didn't use an answering machine and had never been fond of the telephone. He pecked out his letters with both index fingers, one feeble key at a time, hunched over his old Underwood manual on a roll-top desk, under the portrait of Nathan Bedford Forrest. The judge's grandfather had fought with Forrest at Shiloh and throughout the Deep South, and to him no figure in history was more revered. For 32 years, the judge had quietly refused to hold court on July 13th, Forrest's birthday. It came with another letter, a magazine, and two invoices, and was routinely placed in the law school mailbox of Professor Ray Attlee. He recognized it immediately, since such envelopes had been part of his life for as long as he could remember. It was from his father, a man he too called the judge. Professor Attlee studied the envelope, uncertain whether he should open it right there or wait a moment. Good news or bad, he never knew with the judge, though the old man was dying and good news had been rare. It was a business letter, that much was certain. The judge was not one for small talk, hated gossip and idle chit-chat, whether written or spoken. He'd be dead soon. 79 years old, with cancer in his stomach. He was overweight, a diabetic, a heavy pipe smoker, had a bad heart that had survived 3 attacks, and a host of lesser ailments that had tormented him for 20 years and were now finally closing in for the kill. The return address was gold embossed. Chancellor Reuben V. Attlee, 25th Chancery District, Ford County Courthouse, Clanton, Mississippi. Ray slid the envelope into the magazine and began walking. Judge Attlee no longer held the office of chancellor. The voters had retired him 9 years earlier, a bitter defeat from which he would never recover. 32 years of diligent service to his people, and they tossed him out in favor of a younger man with radio and television ads. It took 3 years to get him out of the courthouse. When the county supervisors finally convinced him that he had to leave or be evicted, he boxed up 3 decades' worth of useless files and notes and dusty old books and took them home and stacked them in his study. When the study was full, he lined them down the hallways into the dining room and even the foyer. Ray nodded to a student who was seated in the hall. Outside his office, he spoke to a colleague. Inside, he locked the door behind him and placed the mail in the center of his desk. He took off his jacket, hung it on the back of the door, stepped over a stack of thick law books he'd been stepping over for 30 years, and then, to himself, uttered his daily vow to organize the place. The room was 12 by 15, with a small desk and a small sofa, both covered with enough work to make Ray seem like a very busy man. He was not. For the spring semester, he was teaching one section of antitrust, and he was supposed to be writing a book, another drab, tedious volume on monopolies, that would be read by no one, but would add handsomely to his pedigree. He sat at his desk and shoved papers out of the way. The envelope was addressed to Professor N. Ray Attlee, University of Virginia School of Law, Charlottesville, Virginia. The N was for Nathan, after the general, but few people knew it. One of their uglier fights had been over the son's decision to drop Nathan altogether and plow through life simply as Ray. The judge's letters were always sent to the law school, never to his son's apartment in downtown Charlottesville. The judge liked titles and important addresses, and he wanted folks in Clanton, even the postal workers, to know that his son was a professor of law. It was unnecessary. Ray had been teaching and writing for 13 years, and those who mattered in Ford County knew it. He opened the envelope and unfolded a single sheet of paper. It, too, was grandly embossed with the judge's name and former title and address, again minus the zip code. The old man probably had an unlimited supply of the stationery. It was addressed to both Ray and his younger brother Forrest, the only two offspring of a bad marriage that had ended in 1969 with the death of their mother. The message was brief. Please make arrangements to appear in my study.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?